Oh, I gotta cut this part. I gotta cut.
Listen up, Umi. This is a podcast with the most Ducker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We have the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Hello, everybody.
And Tanya Gates.
Hey, everyone.
Oh, we named the title of the show last time. Like, do you need to change the scenery? We need to name this one. Do you need to change your pants or something after people see the changes coming down? For Warzone Nephilim.
Maybe you were insinuating that people were full of poop.
It's the command point revamp that's possibly been a long time coming, possibly still not warranted. We're here to discuss it.
Yeah, talk about what it means, or at least what it means to us, and then there's some other kind of changes, and you know, maybe why you want to get the book, you know, because there's information in here that may help you win games.
This book is, I mean, I hate to say that some of the previous chapter approved have not always been necessary reading, but if those weren't, this one is. This is such a fundamental way to the way the competitive game is played, and we're specifically talking about match play here, so by all means, if that isn't your cup of tea, hopefully still some awesome things for you to know and pay attention to.
It's the Grand Tournament, Warzone Nephilim Grand Tournament Mission Pack book that we're talking about. Let's just start out over the weekend, was in San Diego talking about some games, Warhammer 40,000, the U.S. Open Series. Tau player Matt Geyer ended up winning. We saw some masterful games. If you're curious about how he did it, how he beat the Tyranids, go check out the coverage on Twitch. I think you can see that in the past videos on the Warhammer TV Twitch channel.
Really interesting weekend for what I think is the... If we're talking about the top of the meta pile at the moment, there's three factions that are kind of all rock, paper, scissoring each other out, like weekend by weekend almost, where there's like a rotation. People, you know, spend 300 to 400 points different in their list, and all of a sudden they get the nuts on their you know, rock, paper, scissors matchup and kind of flip the tables. The weekend just gone. We saw Tau upset the apple cart and take all three of the largest events in the world that weekend.
I was going to ask, as you pulled down a bronze... over there in Australia, what was the top of the heap over there?
So it was Tau won everything, which was the same for the Frontline Gaming event in Atlantic City as well. Tau went first in San Diego where you were, mate, in Narracourt where I was, and in Atlantic City. So 1-1-1 for Tau. Second was Tyranids, to nobody's surprise, and third was my little old self with Dark Angels. I was very, very happy with that result. And it was you always look back. So I played against my only loss was against a gentleman who won, a guy named Adam Napier, who played extremely well. And I had a play to charge one of his crisis suits and then tag into another unit so that he'd have to, you know, he could stay there and shoot me, or he could fall back and try and shoot me with a bigger unit. And I needed to make a 4-inch charge, and it would have got me 9 points because it would have secured me another set of primary points, a stubborn defiance points. And I fell short of second place by 4 points below the Tyranny player, and I rolled a 3 when I needed a 4-inch charge, and I would have come second. And that's the breaks. That's the dice game breaks. You know, when you look back at your results and you're like, what could have changed just fundamentally, increase my standing? I'm like, I needed to roll a 4, not a 3, and that's it.
That is we all know when we reflect upon that, there's a series of generalship choices that led you to needing that 4+.
Well, there was a couple of CP I could have conserved earlier in the game. That meant that I didn't have to live and die by a single result of 2 dice. So
I'm really just giving you a hard time, because we all know that pain, you know, and there's nothing worse than in that exact second, you know, than knowing it.
Oh, that's exactly awesome. Right.
But congratulations on that. That's an excellent finish, man. I mean, you must have slugged it out against some quality players. As you know, we look at tournaments, you know, every week. And by the way, I have had some questions about where people can find the Thursday show and what the actual title of the show is.
Oh, really? Well, I hate to tell you, it's called The Thursday Show, and it's the title of the show is The Thursday Show, because it's the show that happens on Thursdays before the weekend. So with some events starting on Fridays now, some playing through to Mondays, Thursday was the only day we could have it that would directly lead into like coverage and exciting things. So it's the Thursday show.
Yeah, so there we go. And, so that's there's no mystery. Certainly want people to find it, because we do break down the tournaments, the factions you see there, and we have seen Tau on the rise. Like, the Tau have been ticking up in attendance, and it seems like, you know, generals all around the world have kind of cracked that code. It's very interesting to see.
Well, testament to G-Dub's design philosophy of I'm going to use air quotes, modern 9th edition codexes, because there is an undeniable disparity between the first kind of six that came out at the start of 9th edition and then this like last six or seven that have come out recently, where they're just deeper. They're just, you know, when you talk, Paul, go and get your book, you know, take it into the bath with you and mull over your options for a while. There is just so much more to mull over and consider in these last couple of books, where, you know, Tau can go back to the well, find a different play style, and get the wins over the stuff that usually beats them, or vice versa.
Yeah, I just love to see him doing it. So I guess let's talk about this Grand Tournament book here.
Yeah, I mean, and by extension as well, I think we've got a General's Handbook coming out for Age of Sigmar as well, which I think has some pretty big changes also.
I'm not too well versed on what exactly is changing in the General's Handbook, but they're going into seasons, I guess. But yeah, I'm excited because I've heard that there's some new missions. The old missions are really amazing. So even if I'm not playing too much in like a competitive manner, just having new missions is going to be like amazingly fresh and super fun. Yep, I've heard that there's going to be new battle tactics to choose from. And yeah, it's all basically rumors right now. But everybody in the Age of Sigmar community is kind of, there's two camps. There's the people who play 40K who are like, oh, a book every 6 months, that's not so bad. And then there's the people who strictly play Age of Sigmar, like, I don't want to buy one every 6 months. Once a year was bad enough.
I think those seasonal changes, and I actually do like, it keeps the game fresh. And the biggest thing that's going to change over here for the Warhammer 40,000 side is the mustering armies. So, you know, you get command points based on the size of game that you're playing. And Strikeforce now, 2,000 point games, start base with 6 command points.
Yes, we have had a pretty good 9th edition so far, where everyone would just start with 12. And then, of course, a lot of the time, one of your detachments will be free, you know, a la if it's a battalion or patrol, or you've got some special army mechanic like my beloved Dark Angels do, to take an Outrider or Vanguard for free if you, you know, meet a prerequisite sandboxed unit of option, sorry, unit choices. I explained that very poorly. But you know, there was ways for you to get some CP back and start around 12. Like I especially for things like Necrons and other such armies that might not have been great power, like in power on the table, but they always had enough CP that they do some tricky stuff to you. And now everyone's starting that same equation at 6. This is a big change.
I mean, there's been a lot of, so this actually went out on the Warhammer Community article today, so by the time you hear this, it'll be several days from now, and so I'm sure people will have had an opportunity to process some of this stuff. But you've already heard all the cries of, my army can't work, I can no longer play the faction that I was playing before, or what have you. I think that's probably not the best way to look at it, but where I do want to discuss also that now the Warlord trait and the relics, where they were free assignments, you did not have to invest any CP or any sort of resources in to assign your first ones within your army, that is also changing, to where now these requisition stratagems for a Warlord trait or a relic are one command point. That means to functionally play your single battalion list with your Warlord that has a single relic and a single Warlord trait, you are starting the game with 4 command points.
Yes, you are. And in addition, both of these stratagems, requisite stratagems, say you can only use this stratagem once. I expected it to say once for incursion, twice for strike force, 3 times for onslaught, like we've seen previously. If there isn't a caveat in the actual General's Handbook that says use more than once, essentially you get one Warlord trait and one relic. That means, so if people looking at this being like, oh no, my toys are being taken away, and you can look at it like that, I prefer to look at it like, hey, wow, we've all got really difficult and nuanced and important choices to make again, where we can't have it all. And I actually like that better.
And really, realistically, I kind of live with this adage in the back of my head, is that people like change, but no one likes to be changed.
We all like the idea of it, not the implementation. Yeah.
Yeah, but we're all in this together. That's I don't feel like anybody is actually, you know, kind of really being one, you know, one faction is being targeted with this, with this change. But I mean, I'm also not going to shy away from it. It's a pretty big change.
So on the, just to point out how fundamentally different this is, on these metrics, the tournament list that I took last weekend would be starting with minus 3 CP. I started my games at that event with 5 CP, and now I'd be at negative 3. So there's an 8 CP discrepancy between that list construction style and this new one that's coming in. I personally, I have some considerations, some concerns about what this is going to do to certain factions and how some are going to be beneficiaries and some may not be. But I think it's an exciting change. I actually am here for it because I think change is good. And I think we've had this same... Well, actually, I'm trying to think back. In 8th edition, it was the same, wasn't it? We had a prerequisite number of CP at the start. Armies lived and died by how many CP they had and what they could do with them. Yeah. Whereas I think 9th edition is fundamentally different, where I think it's what units do you have and how many and in what combination can you take them? Like you talk about things like that. We have really powerful units that don't really need many CP in the current game. Things like, I'm talking like Wind Riders and Swooping Hawks. I'm talking Terminators, Scarab Occult Terminators. I'm talking Deathwing Terminators, Knights. Like there are a lot of really good units out there, which GW told us that we're going to do at the start of 9th edition. They said, we're going to try and put more power into the data sheets.
I'm a big fan of that, by the way. There was something missing when you felt like the flavor from the unit was not on the sheet. You had to go and, you know, manufacture or burn these things to always get the real, like what you read about in a story, you know, or what inspired you to play them in the first place, kind of thing.
And 8th edition had some really silly things happen where you had so many CP and so many powerful stratagems that it wouldn't matter what unit you used them on. In fact, you went out of your way to find the cheapest place to apply those stratagems. I'm talking exclusively right now about cultists. I was getting tabled by cultists in 8th edition. My Terminator lists, my Lehman Russ lists, my Baneblade lists were getting tabled by cultists.
I'm just thinking that you might not have been very good in 8th edition. No, I'm just kidding. No, that was what that did was it essentially took a 6-point model and made them into assault marines.
You know? Exactly right. You had them, they could shoot twice with +1 to wound. They could have an invulnerable save and being -1 or multiple minuses to hit. And so people just found the cheapest platform to apply all these buffs, and now you have to go looking for ways and means to use your buffs. And now you've got half the CP, or in my case, a quarter of the CP to use them upon. And so it's actually going to be really interesting making these choices. I do feel like there's some mechanics in the game which I hope they've taken into consideration, because the removal of CP from a lot of armies makes a lot of sense, but then they've built in mechanics into certain armies that mean it's not going to be as big a deficit for them as others.
Before we get there, let's talk a little bit about the Warlord trait and relic assignment stuff, because I've already seen some questions about that just like pop up, and I'll just give you like one person's opinion, and we can talk about it, how it all plays out. But we talked a little bit about it in the pre-show, and I'm pretty sure that we've determined that if you were to take a special character and they have a specific Warlord trait that needs to be assigned to them, you still have to pay for it, because that Warlord trait is not listed on their data slate. You have to go to the Warlord trait page, and there it says, if you decide to give this character a Warlord trait, then it must be this Warlord trait.
Yes.
So you still have to go through the motions of assigning it to them, even though it is predetermined what it is. And so you would have to spend the CP for it.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are some already, there's like, and this is just speaking for Dark Angels, but it's an applicable idea. I've got Azrael in my book. A lot of people have an equivalent to Azrael. When he is your Warlord, he gives you 2 CP. But because he's my Warlord, I have to buy him. I want to have a Warlord trait. He's the only one I could give it to because he is my Warlord. So to get the 2 CP and to give him that a Warlord trait, I lose a CP. So I either have to not buy him a Warlord trait, which I think I have the option to do, to just be like, he's my Warlord, no Warlord trait.
I think it is. I mean, especially now, you don't have to give a trait. Before, there was no downside to picking one because it was free.
Or 3. I had three Waller traits on the weekend. Where it becomes icky for a lot of people is that there are some pieces of armies that have just become ubiquitous with those armies. I'm talking like your Super Apothecary for Space Marines in particular, your Cold Star Commander for Tau that has Mark of the Hunter or whatever it is, the 4 rolls to hit, 4 rolls to wound. Can you afford to take those now? Those, you know, I'm just buffing myself guys, like your Super Chaplain as well. There are so many of these little tech pieces, and we're all going to have, like, look in the mirror and be like, do I really need it or can I live without it? And I love that discussion. I'm
now,
here for it.
The way that you generate let me talk about the relics one second. Is it the relics? I think the same principle applies, but most named characters don't truly have relics. They just have a cool weapon on there or something on their data slate.
Yeah, they shouldn't get relics. They're exclusively carrying relics.
Yeah, but it's not a relic for the purposes of this. They still would get those weapons, and that wouldn't cost them anything extra.
Yeah, like Gilliman, he is a relic. On the shelf.
Vinegar here.
Someone's got to fill in for Red. I'll do what I can.
Oh, there you go. Thanks. Pulling some double and triple duty. Appreciate everyone on the show. So with this, let's talk about how certain armies are kind of advantaged, even going into this 6 command point, potentially 4 command point scenario. But I do want to point out that you generate command points twice as much. So both in your and your opponent's command phase, you get a CP. And then if you got like the Tallyman, is Tallyman back on the menu? Pump up 3 command points a turn? Battle round?
Yeah, I totally think it has to be, right? Like those little tech pieces that just bring a few more CP to the table, that's a way you can gain significant advantage over your opponents now. And especially like, I know in 8th edition, it was but always a given that you'd have some way of regaining CP when you use them, like on a 5+, I get one of yours when you use or get one back when I use. We have to ask if those are going to become really important again. I mean, I know like Grey Knights have a psychic power to get a CP back. Tau have a canticle, I can't remember what it's called, ethereal prayer to get a CP. Those things become really important points of distinction between armies now.
Yeah, I think this some of the things you kind of took for granted now are going to creep their way into like actual necessities, which is interesting. But I'm not really so. The perception is that a lot of the strongest list burn all their command points or half their command points at least before the game even starts.
Yes, dude. Well, I do. And most of the people I've talked to do the same, because it's the best way to invest in the future of your army is to take something that so you think it's a stratagem to buy a relic, to buy a Waller trait. The difference between that stratagem and other stratagems is that Waller trait and relic have the ability to give you value in every turn of the game rather than just the one turn where you use another stratagem. Like, you know, I use a stratagem to shoot better, to fight better. Using a pregame stratagem means that you essentially have a stratagem-like effect given to your army always, if you want to look at it within those metrics, within a vacuum. And so it was always good to front load your CP because you always knew you had the tech when you needed it because usually you would build it into your list as a fundamental.
It's like reliable thing to do, is it?
Exactly right. Like the selfless healer. Like, you know, am I playing a game where I have to expose units to get them killed? Then if I am, then, you know, bringing a model back for free is always going to be a point of value. And that was a CP that you spend to get a Waller trait that saves you CP because it stops you from having to pay to bring things back to life. Mm-hmm. So that one was always an auto take almost. And when we're talking about things like that, those are the things we have to consider. Which one is the most important one of those? Because it's the only one you're going to get now.
Well, it's going to be a brave new world. I think that's going to cause some list choices that I can agree with people. I don't want to sound like I'm not sympathetic. They may not have to make. And there's something to be said about playing. You know, you found a way that you are happy to play with. You built models for certain 3 patrols or whatever. You know,
yeah.
And now that might not be quite as feasible.
Yeah. There's also some really cool little bits and pieces in books. What was pointed out to me, I was chatting with one of my Drakari playing mates, and he said a Real Space Raid Detachment has a 1 CP strat to give you 3 Warlord traits, a pregame strategy for 1 CP.
That's right. As long as you took one of each, like,
exactly.
Whatever, right?
That becomes a point of distinction. You already have more tech options and more built-in little pieces. And all of a sudden, those things matter a lot more, which that's one of the things I'm really happy about here. Those things matter a lot more. There's also another couple of bits and pieces in here, whereas, like, you can pay CP to upgrade a sergeant in a lot of armies to have a relic-like piece on them, yep. piece of war gear to a relic-like effect, those things become so much more important because you're most likely that's the place you go to now to get your little tech piece. It's going to be attached to a unit, not a model that you can keep secret and keep safe all game. So I love it.
I'm trying to think about how it would affect lists that I like to play, but I'm typically not one to invest a lot of CP into the pre thing, but I'm also like, unless I'm playing Blood Angels, then I've got a couple extra tricks.
Yeah, well, it's so the first kind of point of question I guess people got to put to themselves is, does my army make a battalion well? Yeah. If you make a battalion well, you're already in a great place, I think.
Well, what armies don't make a battalion well?
Well, so there are some armies at the top of the pile that really don't like using battalions. One of them being Asuriani. They it's conventionally seen that the troops choices in the Asuriani portion of that codex aren't where the strength is. Guardians, the Void Scarred or whatever they're called, Rangers are not all that powerful. Very good objective holders. Some OPSEC is necessary, but you can't. They're not Dire Avengers. They're not Swooping Hawks. They're not Scorpions or Banshees. These super exciting, super potent portions of your army, and so they're considered to be taxes, like having to buy them as a tax. And then there are other armies like Tau who really want to take multiple detachments because it's the only way to get multiple commanders, and commanders are phenomenally powerful as killing machines and as buffing components. And so them having to go down to possibly only one detachment, that's a big deal for them too.
Yeah, I was thinking about the fact that folks want to try to get in, I guess, armies that rely on 4 or 5 HQ.
Mm. Well, dude, yourself, I mean, Blood Angels don't mind taking battalions at all, but a lot of the time you'd love to be able to just take a single Vanguard and just fill that out. Well, it's going to cost you 3 CP now.
Yeah, I need all my CP for rerolls, man.
you can't fail. How does Guard feel about this, Tanya? I suppose it's not too awful for Guard. They tend to fill up battalions pretty well.
Yeah, they tend to fill up battalions pretty well. And in general, I mean, there's like one or two good ones. So you were never taking like a lot of pre-game stuff. When I played, which was like, I guess, a year ago for Guard, I was not really taking a whole bunch of extra stuff because you needed a lot of command points to make the army shoot better. You just needed the command points for your stratagems, plus one to hit and stuff like that. So
I love the additional Overwatch benefit too. That was,
yeah, and like Vengeance for Cadia, if you're playing against anything Chaos, like you're saving all of your command points for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good. Yeah, I don't think it really affects Guard. I kind of worry a little bit for armies that didn't have a lot of great stratagems, so used to spend their command points in the pregame. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm kind of worried a little bit for Chaos Demons. I kind of worry a little bit for Orcs. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with them.
Orcs can catch a break.
Yeah. I feel like if I was going to play them, I'd want to take 2 detachments.
Mm-hmm. 2 war bosses, absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like that's how I would want to do it. So, but maybe it's the push that these factions need to innovate a little bit. I'm really not too sure.
I think with the fact that you see people still start with 6 and 7 or whatever. So really what it does is just have them enter the game at 0, functionally 0, and then they're quickly back up to 2.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I think this just takes some time to play and figure it out.
I think so too. And there's some other places that people should look to for that spicy tech or the thing that can give them their distinctions apart from like the CP usage and their warlord traits and stuff. We need a term for this. Someone's called it to me the dollar value menu, where you spend your stuff to soup up your army, your extra points section. You know, for you, it's the visions in Blood Angels. For me, it's like upgrading things to be Death Company or Inner Circle. The Knights have the Exalted Courts. Everyone's got their thing where they buy off the dollar menu to give them their spicy little bit of stuff. That's where I think people should turn to first and foremost to see if they've got anything in there that they've always wanted to have but never found the point because they had a Warlord trait or a relic that did something better or similar. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely where people should, like, if they're going to crack open their books and look where to start on making their list spicy and their own and they're having their identity again, that's a great place to go.
Yeah, I love that. Well, we're also list brewers, you know, so it's
absolutely
see it as a potential challenge to get in there and mix it up. I will say, you know, that, and you were mentioning this before we kind of segued back on the thing we were talking about, was that, like, things like fate dice, miracle dice, luck dice, you know, they could have a dramatic impact. Well, they already do. They could be even more powerful. But I think it's going to be kind of tempered with the fact that those, the Eldari as we know them right now, Asrani, would not have any other stratagems to support that. They would basically only be relying on their fate dice for a turn or two instead of having plus, 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 plus.
Yeah, it's so that's what I was mentioning before about there's armies that feel like they're going to benefit more because everyone else is losing and they've got mechanics that already even out the bell curve, you know, make their things more reliable. They don't need, you know, the best example, yeah, like you said, was the fate dice, where you have that ability to just make yourself have a stable turn or have a turn where you can just do the job you felt like you needed to get done. The other ones is miracle dice. Getting twice as many miracle dice now means that, you know, there's a lot more freedom for Sisters players to take control of the game and just make things reliable for them. And the last one is Laughing God dice. I can't tell you how rough it might feel sometimes when you play against when you start your game with your one CP and you're very happy to have it, very lucky to have your one CP, and they've got their one CP and five Laughing God dice, and they're like, wow, so they just get to like reroll everything, and I maybe I'll have the guts to use this one CP to reroll a vital save, and they're just like, oh yeah, casually just rerolling three failed four up invulns over there, and you're like, oof, that's rough.
I kind of have to agree with that. But I mean, think this though, like the Eldari are like lightning fast reactions is still one command point. Like they're not going to be true. Doubling up on doing it in the shooting phase and the assault phase.
Yeah.
And probably early on in the game.
Yeah. What I do like about this as well is that some of the primary like bread and butter stratagems for armies is usually like two or three CP a turn. Like Asuriani being another prime example, you always wanted to do your auto six battle focus and your fire and fade.
Yeah, fire and fade is two CP.
Yeah, exactly right. So you're gonna spend three CP every turn to do the same thing you're doing now. Well, guess what? You there's no way you can do that five turns in a row now.
Yeah. Like, Eldritch Storm is three CP. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I know that we are. I don't know that everyone respects the Eldritch Storm enough. You know,
but you can't just slap it down haphazardly now.
Like, yeah.
And as an opponent, I've seen times where people have slapped down that Eldritch Storm and it's really underperformed. And as an opponent, if they want to bottom out on CP immediately, I might try and bait them into doing it. Be like, hey, my life gets a lot easier when you don't have CP to jank around and do all your crazy stuff. So I'm going to clump up just enough stuff to make you want to do it and see if you'll blink. I like that portion of this change as well.
The way Eldritch Storm works, if people aren't familiar with it, is that you can cast it from a Farseer, you spend 3 CP, you do this action, you put a point on the tabletop, and then it basically is like a mortal wound orbital bombardment.
Everyone within 6 takes a mortal wounds with some extra additions for each other Farseer that kind of contributed to the casting, or to the power, did the action, and I've seen it do like 35, 40 mortal wounds. I've also seen it do like 6.
Yeah.
You know? It's
Like I'm saying, there's some armies that can't help but play into it. You know, like Guard and Adeptus Auritas are kind of like you're very vulnerable to it because you kind of have to be clumped up to do certain things sometimes. So it's very powerful and it can do a ton of mortal wounds if there are enough units around it, but it also is 3 CP.
How do we feel like this is going to affect Custodes, right? Because Custodes, a lot of the time, you were spending a lot of command points to beef up your characters and stuff. So, and then on top of that, they really rely heavily on their stratagems to essentially stay alive.
Isn't that really good one for the Terminators, like a 2 CP thing?
Well, to split them up and stuff.
I think so.
Custodes are an interesting place, and there's a couple of other armies that I think are in interesting spots as well. Knights being another one, where Custodes come to the battlefield, and just by default, they bring what we call, and quotation, I'm using bunny ears quotation marks now, a stat check. They bring a stat check with them, being like, can you crack this much toughness 5, 2+ save? And a lot of the time, I hate to tell you, people use CP to crack that 2+ save. They get a plus one to wound. They pay for extra rend. They pay for mortal wounds in addition. You know, things like Sisters, another great example, paying for, you know, your Blessed Bolters to do, you know, up to 6 mortal wounds, Wrath of Mars. You used to use CP to crack this stat check. Same with Knights. You know, you pay for extra damage, play for plus ones to wound and to hit and stuff. And so I think a lot of time, Tanya, you're perfectly right. A lot of people used CP to keep their stuff alive, but it was usually reactionary CP to what your opponent was spending. It was usually a lot of time your opponent would be like, well, I'm going to spend this, 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 and this. Or your opponent would be like, are you going to spend any CP? Because if you don't, I will. And then you'd be like, well, yeah, I'm going to transhuman. So you don't, you know, go for double damage or, you know, melter at full range and stuff like that. So I feel like it could be a case where Custodes, and I think Knights as well, are beneficiaries of this, where they're like, well, we're harder to crack because you don't have the CP to spike into us. But if you do, like if you time your, if you hold your nerve and have like 6-7 CP turn 3, and we've been frivolous, we could just evaporate. So I think it's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on those armies in particular. I think Knights are possibly a better example because I tell you what, people need CP to crack a bunch of big Knights. If you're bringing 3 big Knights to the table and you shove them in your opponent's face, it was usually CP that allowed them to kill 2 in a turn, that allowed them to kill 1.5.
But those Knights also need CP.
They got to rotate. You got to spend 2 CP. Yeah, you got to spend 2 CP to zombie up your Knight after it dies if you're Tyrannus and stuff like that. So you're absolutely right. There is a, and that's why I said that's a really good thing to put under the microscope. You know, great eyes from Tanya picking up on it because they could go either way. And I think it's really up to the player to make the most of those changes.
Yeah, I don't pretend to know how this is all going to shake out and who the big winners and big losers are going to be, but it seems like where I'd be focusing on things that have just like powerful stats that need less manipulation or at least 1 CP gas in their tank.
Yeah, exactly right. But yeah, the ones that apart from the ones we just mentioned, I really want to keep an eye out on Harlequins, Assyriani, and Sisters to see how if this changes, just supercharges their, you know, faction abilities like, you know, Fate Dice, Laughing Dice, Miracle Dice.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about some of the secondaries that are all in this thing. So that's one of the things about the cool information is that the book now has all the factions and secondaries in here for people to read and prepare for competitive games. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. So as mentioned in this book, there are a collection of all these secondaries from all the different factions.
Yeah, it's just got all of them in it, right?
Yeah, I think it's cool to have it in one place.
Do they have a full page of strats for the armies that don't have a codex yet? Like, so they said there's a full page of ones for Guard, Demons, Chaos Space Marines?
That is true, yes.
Oh, that's such a boon for them.
That is so, you know, games are won and lost by scoring points. I mean, I know that's the kind of wisdom, you know, that you needed right there.
Just laying down the truth bombs there, mate.
I feel like that's something that a hockey player would say when the interviewer stops them on the way to the locker room.
You're just lucky Red wasn't here to hear that one.
But it's, you know, what the secondaries do, or the faction specific secondaries, is typically there's at least one or two in there that your army's like really good at scoring, and it gives an advantage, I think. So the fact that they're all here, and there are some here that weren't present for armies before, but there are also, you know, the other benefit is your opponents may familiarize themselves with them. So maybe you'll have, you know, a more competitive or more balanced game because your opponent will already be familiar with what you have and what you could do and what you could try to do and well, interact with you more.
Yeah. In addition, a lot of the secondaries incentivize different builds within a codex. I mean, prime example for Blood Angels is the secondary to get in to have a jump pack unit in your opponent's deployment zone. Is that right? And then have none in yours, as in like, yeah. I am Blood Angels and I send. And I go, we go, we all go, all the boys, we're going, you know,
over there.
Where's the opponent? That's where we're going to be. And like, you know, Sisters, another, I know I've talked about Sisters a lot, but Sisters, another great example, you know, with Leap of Faith and stuff, it's incentivizing you to maximize your primary faction mechanic. And there are all sorts of ones like this as well. Like, you know, Oath of the Moment for Marines, you've got to go tangle in the middle, incentivizes positive gameplay, as in like interactive gameplay, not just sitting still doing nothing. And there are all these ones that incentivize different ways to play the game. And it was awkward for a lot of the factions that didn't have secondaries, and they have just kind of very basic modes of play to score points. Okay, every game is Stranglehold or Engage. That never changes. You know, every single game is the same. And so the faction secondaries are a great way of putting exciting elements into play between different armies.
Chaos Demons have something called Reality Rebels.
Rebels?
I'm sure it's for rebels.
Reality Rebels? In like, without a cause?
No, that's right. Reality Rebels.
Man, that's awesome.
I think it sounds a lot more exciting though. The other,
it does. Yeah. Just like an oil slick.
Yeah, I was just picturing like everybody in leather jackets.
Yeah. Just a keeper combing its hair back before it cuts up some fools. Like,
oh, I gotta cut this part. I gotta cut.
That's so good. No, you leave it in. What does the secondary do?
So Chaos Demons have a secondary called Reality Rebels.
Without a cause. Totally without a cause.
At the end of your turn, score one victory point for each table quarter that has one or more Chaos Demon units from your army wholly within it, provided your opponent does not have more units wholly within the same table quarter. For the purposes of this bullet point, exclude any units that are within 6 inches of the center of the battlefield.
Oh, that's cool.
There's two points here. So there's another one. Score one victory point if one or more Chaos Demon units from your army, excluding Heretic Astartes units, are wholly within 6 inches of the center of the battlefield. So you can get 2 points.
So how many can you score per turn? Has that got a cap on it?
No, it does not.
Oof. So is that saying you could score 6 points a turn if you... Well, that means you've tabled your opponent. But, I mean, 4 points a turn isn't too hard to do in that one. So outnumber in the middle and then, you know, you're in Dawn of War, have more on your side of the table than their side of the table. So that's actually pretty reasonable.
Well, so and it's the score one victory point if one or more Chaos Demon units from your army, excluding Heretic Astartes, are wholly within 6 inches of the center of the battlefield. That does not have to be outnumbered.
Yeah. Oh, so you just be there. And the other one is one for each table quarter where you have more units.
Yes. And then not within 6 inches. You got to like be in the table quarter.
If that's in Battlefield Supremacy.
It is.
Good. So there's your option. So one of the things that people may or may not know by now is that the two essentially ubiquitous, everyone built to do secondaries of the edition so far, first one being Stranglehold. That was just like, are you playing to win the game? Congratulations, you're getting Stranglehold points. was how that one was worded, because you got 3 victory points at the end of your turn. If you control more victory points, objectives than your opponent. So literally, if you're playing to win the game, you are getting 3 points a turn. It was very simple that every army would write that down at the start. And the other one that everyone built to take was To the Last. And the problem with To the Last is I don't think it should ever have rewarded you maximum points. And I personally would prefer it if To the Last still existed, but you only got like 12 points for succeeding. Like every unit that was alive gave you 4 points instead of 5. But I still why they got rid of it, because I think it just incentivized a negative or boring play style. And we want more action. So having secondaries like this for demons means that they have nothing really got taken away, because they still have a great Battlefield Supremacy option.
Yeah, I like that. It's good. Great points. And the fact that demons, you kind of in your mind envision them overwhelming you, you know, with the chittering hordes from an alternate reality.
Yeah. All those rebels from those other realms, you know, those realm rebels.
The realities. Yeah. There we go.
Just rocking up in their grease lightning. You what's up.
The No Mercy, No Respite category, Nourished by Terror. Each time an enemy model flees the battlefield, score one victory point. Might be cool, I guess. There's another bullet point. Each time an enemy unit is destroyed by a Chaos Demons unit from your army, excluding Heretic Astartes, before removing the last model in that destroyed unit from the battlefield, roll 2d6. If the result equals or exceeds the leadership characteristic of the enemy model, score one victory point. A unit can, if it is resurrected for any reason, it was removed from the battlefield and put back, potentially contribute victory points due to this secondary objective several times.
That's cool. I don't know how often it's going to come up, but it's cool. Because like Tyrion, Tyranids don't care at all. Yeah. But
Gilliman, you know?
Oh, you kill Gilliman, roll an 11, he gives you the points, gets back up, kill him again, roll another 11. I love it. but yeah, no, that's cool.
I don't know if I like secondaries where I have to do something and then roll a dice. You know, it's just I worked really hard. I mean, I play factions that are a little bit underpowered, but I worked really hard for that, and now my points are dependent on a dice roll. I'm not sure.
It still
sure.
might not happen. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of feels bad, man.
You do have the other 1 point for that, and, you know, this is something that I probably wouldn't take unless I was building to take for it, to, engineer it. I can't say for certain how often some of these things will be chosen, but I'm with you. Like, anytime that you've got to do something and then roll a die, I'm like, oop, I'm out. That's too much luck for me.
That's true. I mean, we don't know the context of the demon book yet. Like, every single demon could have an aura of minus X leadership and it goes up by one for every 10 models in the unit or something. Like, a unit of 30 bloodletters has a perma 6-inch aura of minus 3 leadership. And then this is freaking awesome. Like, you know, custodies are failing on a 7, you know, and stuff like that. But yeah, on face value, I'm absolutely there with you. I'm the same with stratagems as well. I never want to spend a resource for a chance. I want to spend a resource for just a guarantee.
Yeah.
You know, you don't spend money. It's like gambling. Sorry. And if you gamble, hopefully you do so responsibly and safely. But, you know, you go to the pokey machine, and you put your dollar in for a chance to win. Not always the smartest thing to do with your dollar, you know?
You might not get those points. So the next one here is Shadow Operations, Despoilers of Reality, every Chaos Demon imagery unit. These all exclude Heretic Astartes, so I won't read that, you know, when it comes up again. But one or more Chaos Demon infantry units in your army can start to perform an action at the end of your movement phase. Each unit from your army that starts to perform this action must be within range of a different objective marker you control that is not within your deployment zone and has not been corrupted by your army. The action is completed at the start of your next command phase or at the end of the battle. If completed, the objective marker is said to have been corrupted by your army. Score 4 victory points each time a unit from your army completes this action.
Cool.
I like it. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. I don't mind that at all. It sounds like the spread the sickness for Death Guard could get an upgrade, because this one just sounds like a better version of that.
You're not taking any wounds off this one, so.
Oh, that's true. That's true. There's no clapback.
Automatic upgrade on that.
Also, so Warhammer Community said today that you're going to be able to take multiple faction secondaries. So this was something they removed in the previous. One where they said you can only have a maximum of one, no matter from what sources, because Space Marine players used to take Oath of Moment and then one from their supplement, and you know that could be done. A bunch of different armies could do that, but Space Marines were the biggest offender, and they closed that off. It sounds like they've gone the other way and been like, instead of closing off just for Space Marines, we're going to open up for everybody. If you want to take only secondaries from your faction, you can, as long as they're all in different categories, right?
Yeah, same. Yeah, I think that's you're
so
correct.
Everybody go with the removal of Stranglehold. There are a lot of books out there that have a Stranglehold light. You know, something that is like Stranglehold, but wasn't as good as Stranglehold. Well, Stranglehold's gone, so that might be an amazing secondary now. So go have a read, check out what you got. Because I mean, I know with Space Marines and Guard only has had one for the longest time, but legitimately, I would love to be able to play multiple Space Marine secondaries.
So there is a note in here that specifically addresses that. And actually, it says note. That in Warzone Nephilim games, players can now select up to 3 faction secondary objectives, provided all 3 of their secondary objectives are from different categories.
It's really exciting. So what I heard there was, hey, we're going to cut down on the CP portion of the flexibility, but we're going to incentivize you to look elsewhere for your builds, for your build arounds, things you're going to double down and really invest your points in. And so go look at your secondaries, because if they tell you to build in a certain way that you wouldn't have considered before, it might just be the best way to go now.
Well, if we want to talk about maybe a little Astra Militarum.
Oh, please do, lay it on me. we could legitimately just start a Guard podcast as well.
Yeah. Maybe it puts up on YouTube or something here. So here's Astra Militarum. Purge the enemy. Score 1 victory point each time an enemy unit that started the turn within range of an objective marker is destroyed by an Astra Militarum unit from your army.
Perfect. Okay. That's what you want to see. Because you clearing objectives? good. Getting points.
That's the category purge the enemy. It was buy last gun and bayonet. That's the name of the stratagem.
Oh, that's so good.
The next one is in Shadow Operation Special Orders. If you select this objective, units from your army can attempt the following action. Expunge intel. One Astromilitarum infantry unit from your army can start to perform this action at the end of your movement phase if it's within 12 of a friendly officer unit, is within the range of an objective marker you control that is not within your deployment zone and has not already been controlled. The action is completed at the end of the turn. If completed, the objective marker is said to have been expunged by your army. Roll 1d6 each time an objective marker is expunged for your army. On a 6, you gain 1 command point.
Oh, nice little extra there.
Yeah, at the end of the battle, score a number of victory points based on how many objective markers have been expunged by your army, as shown on the table below. If you have 4+, you get full 15. First one is 2, second one is 5, third one is 10, 4 is 15.
I like this one, but getting 4 is very hard. But there's only one, and I don't even know if these have changed, but there's only one mission at the moment where I think you could get 4 very well. It's the Data Scry Salvage, the one where you've got 4 running diagonally from the top left to the bottom right. They're all, you got 1 in each deployment zone, then 4 running diagonally down the table. Like that one, you could get 4 on, but getting 3 on this is still fine. Like, cause you're getting 3 is 10 points, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, it's fine. If you can reliably get 3. You're laughing.
Battlefield Supremacy, boots on the ground. At the end of each of your turns, excluding the first, score 1 victory point for each table quarter that has one or more regiment infantry units from your army wholly within it, excluding character models, and also units that are in 6 inches of the center of the battlefield. And then the next bullet point is score 1 victory point if one or more units from your army equipped with a regimental standard are either wholly within 6 inches of the center of the battlefield or wholly within your opponent's deployment zone.
Oh, yeah.
So that's slightly different than the one we just talked about.
I was hoping there'd be something like this, like the regimental flying the standard in the middle of the table. That's the coolest crap ever. That's
or your enemy deployment zone, which is even cooler.
Even cooler. Just plant the banner, get some points. That's so awesome.
Next one. This is S4 in the No Mercy, No Respite category is Inflexible Command. At the start of your turn, score 2 victory points if every Astromilitarum infantry unit from your army is within 6 inches of a friendly officer. Score 1 victory point if every Astromilitarum vehicle unit from your army is within 12 inches of a vehicle officer. Score 1 victory point if any enemy units were destroyed by Astromilitarum units from your army this turn while the Astromilitarum unit was being affected by an order or tank order.
Oh my god, that's just free money right there.
It does seem pretty good.
That's supercharged. That's the. Are you using your army mechanics? Tick. Cool. Points for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. The only downside to that one is if guard keep their move order, and where you shoot out one guy to disrupt their scoring or get in the way or roadblock, you're not going to get your points. So you have to actually weigh that up now.
I think it's a pretty good one.
I think it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, there's all kind of stuff in here as far as like everything that didn't have something, you can assume that it does. And then if you weren't familiar with your opponent's stuff or your buddy's stuff that you don't play very often, you know, you can peruse it.
Well, that's a great point. Another reason I think this book's important, because so many times people would explain a really complicated secondary to me. That's one of their factions one. And you just like you hear the first sentence and then your eyes just glaze over. And then they start getting like 5 points a turn, and you're like, sorry, what? Can I see your book, please, sir?
Yeah, I get 6 for that, 2 for this, 8 for this. Like, huh?
Yeah, and you could just sit there like looking at their options and then just study them on your own time because you're all in your book.
Or when you hear it, it won't be just unfamiliar to you. You know, you kind of already have a couple of those seeds planted.
Yeah. No, I like this. I like this change. Yeah. Though I especially like being able to take multiple faction secondaries because I'm a Dark Angels player and I got some really good ones, like really good ones.
You mentioned this, but I don't know if we specifically called it out, but like Stranglehold is not a secondary anymore.
Yeah, it is deleted and a big deal. It was too auto take. You should never have a secondary. That's just auto take. Do you think you're going to win this game? And are you planning to win this game? Take Stranglehold. Every time.
Also, there was like both you and your opponent could get it. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It could be something that, granted, you're working to try to get more points than your opponent, so you're not going to let them have it, but you could still both have it.
100%. You could still both max it, technically.
Yeah.
It was just a boring secondary.
Yeah, and then to the last.
To the last was a boring secondary as well. It was a very good secondary, and you had to build your army appropriately. But yeah, it was just – it was too negative. There was no – like it promoted zero interplay between you and your opponent. It told you to take zero risks, to barely play the game. And so I'm happy it's gone because I thought it promoted
– Did you see it play out that way that often in like higher – like with game two equally matched generals? Did you see it play out that way very often? I kind of like the interplay of the risk involved when one general had to commit either more than they were expecting to, or they put a flank, you know, they put some kind of denied flank up and then got rolled through or something. You know, it just
it really happens when one player loses five of their to the last points and the other player doesn't. That was where the big change was. But like there are some armies that just got to do it without any risk. I know people who play Dark Eldar, and their three to the last are two Homunculuses and Drazar, who all sit in a raider that's off the table for the first like three turns.
True.
You know, that's that kind of stuff is silly and pointless, and it's just 15 points in the bag for only not using like less than 250 points of your army, like less than a quarter.
That's very true.
Yeah, and but then you had other armies like, you know, like T-Suns or Space Marines, Knights, who like their to the last options are the units that they need to use to win the game. And in those situations, it was a very good secondary because it was a very big risk-reward play. Like, I need to play very very clever with these three big things that I must use. And in those games, it was extremely fun. But, you know, I just talking about my experience again as Dark Angels, I would take two Talon Masters and one Brick of Terminators, and those would be my to the lasts. And then I would take Stubborn Defiance, which meant that I should have those Terminators sitting on an objective in my backfield, and then those Terminators bodyguard the Talon Masters. Those Terminators are in cover, absurdly hard to kill. They're going to feel no pain. They get regenerated, and those Talon Masters just shoot from behind the Terminators all game. And then I get 15 points. And in fact, I get 30 points because the Terminator sitting on an objective is another 15 points. So that stuff is what was stupid. You got this double down effect for already taking stale, boring, non-interactive secondaries. But once again, you had to build for it, and that was, you know, legitimately 600, 700 points of my army doing that, which made for, it made for some boring games, man. Like,
fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what they're removing there. They're removing the predictability, because when I see Stranglehold on you could probably speak to this as well as an analyst and a commentator. When we see and we talk about and we call so many games, that when I see the secondaries, and I can just tally up in my head around about what I think they're going to get. And it was, I found 9th edition a little bit too predictable and who was going to win. And so, and two of the big tenets of that was to the last and Stranglehold. Like once the dominant player got up on Stranglehold, if two players took Stranglehold and one player got up on it by 3 points, that could just be the game. You know? Very hard to come back. And so I think that it made for another boring element.
No, I think those are all great points, and I do like anything that promotes interactivity. Like this stuff on the game, you know, makes it aggressive, makes it where players. I mean, don't get me wrong, I also know that kind of holding out and weathering the storm can be a very exciting thing also. But as far as like how to get points or, you know, whatever, I like it to for both players to feel like they have something to say.
Agreed. Really important that it's as interactive a game as possible.
Yeah, I like this change. I like, jury's still out, I think, on the command points. But I think the secondaries probably a lot more fun to be had here. And it's going to take some getting used to when you enter the game with half as many CPs as before.
Yeah, look, I like the changes. I genuinely do like the changes. I think it's going to take some getting used to, but I'm here for it. I'm here for anything that kind of mixes things up. I do like that this seasonal kind of 6 months stability, and then every now and then we get like a proper mix up of the fundamentals of the game, not just points. And I'm totally down. If this is what they're doing seasonally, we're going to have this many much of a fundamental change. It might feel bad now. But the like you said before, we're list curators. I'd like sitting in front of my heater in like winter with a dice tray, two or three codexes that I need to find a way and a means to combat the meta with, you know, rolling out dice to see if the math in my head matches up with the dice, and just cooking up some new stuff. And when G-Dub tells me I got to go back to the drawing board, I meet it with excitement. I meet it with this is opportunity for change, for new and exciting ways to play the game. I certainly hope that's true for Age of Sigmar as well, Tanya.
I'm a person who really struggled to understand how to write a good list. It just baffled my mind that people would enjoy writing lists. They would just theory craft because that's something that they enjoy.
It is our jam.
Right? And yeah. It took me a really, really long time to understand it, but now I do feel like since it's a lot more simple in Age of Sigmar, it's allowing me to grasp concepts about list building a lot better. And I think when I'm ready to come back to Warhammer 40K, I think I'm going to be able to wrap my head around it even more so than I had before. But yeah, it's easier in some ways in Age of Sigmar, but it's also a little bit more difficult because you can't get your list like right on the nose. Like if you're playing 2000 points, it's very rarely going to be like 2000 points of an Age of Sigmar list. But yeah, I don't know. I'm learning to love the theory craft
over the course.
It's a slow process though.
Over the course this weekend, I will definitely be trying to get the high score in Battleforge,
which is
the army creation tool in the Warhammer app. That is, yeah, I mean, God, I like the challenges this is bringing. I'm wondering if, like, and I haven't done this analysis yet, but, like, will there be units that are more attractive because I know they won't just get swept off the table by someone else using their points, their command points?
Yeah, exactly right. Like, there's a lot less of, here's my mediocre unit that I put three command points in and it becomes a god. You know, it just kills anything in the game. It's much more like, here's four or five units I had to take, so I started with CP, and I need to make the best use of them now for what they are. Yeah. Objective holding, yeah, road blocking, yeah.
What about units that give you extra command points? Are those going to be more valuable? Are you going to see those units more? Like, are we going to see Trajan? Because it gives you an extra one. Plus, he doesn't need
Khalgar.
He doesn't need a lot of command points to just survive and be a beat stick, right? So...
Well, yeah, he's one of those guys that just comes with a crazy level of durability and power already. So, like, he doesn't need any CP support. He's already like it's almost as good as it gets. So there is a lot of value to be had in units like that. Yeah, I do think that's very interesting.
And as a point, I know we've talked a bunch about Eldari, but they do have the Webway portal, which gives you like a discount on what you have to spend CP-wise to make some effects happen, put things into reserves.
Exactly right. That's another exciting choice.
That's already getting taken right now. That's getting taken today.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, you're spending 1 to 2 CP rather than spending 4, which I tell you right now, very few armies are going to start with 4 CP, I think, is a big deal, really big deal for added flexibility pre-game.
Yeah, I think Eldari are going to, they're already right there on the cusp, especially with some of the, you know, the variant builds and that kind of things. But I think they're going to jump almost like immediately into that top spot.
I think they are as well. I think the mechanics are primed to pop right off. If we're done on that, I have to gush over a model for a moment.
Yeah, please do. I also want to give people an update on the Kickstarter we talked about last week, gush away.
Every now and then, G-Dub puts out a model that I have to just sit and stare at for a bit. There is Spiker is what they've called it. And I saw this model and I thought, my God, that is a perfect miniature.
I wasn't sure which game system it went with. I mean, I'm like, this can fit in many different places.
Oh, I mean, you want a Magus for your GSC? Like you could, oh my God, it's so good. This model is perfect. And I'd like to say special props to G-Dub for whoever painted this, because there have been some miniatures that I've seen that have come out where I thought, oh yeah, that's a good paint job. It's a good solid paint job. But this is painted phenomenally.
Look at it as attainable versus not attainable.
Yeah, this is almost unattainably good, the paint job. It's incredible. The posing, the thematic effects, the build, the throwback to the old art as well. Just go stare at this model, guys. It's freaking incredible.
No arguments here. I completely agree with you. That thing is immaculate. Just exactly evocative, and the paint job is amazing.
Yeah. Incredible. So how's the Kickstarter going?
Yeah, doing really well. So this has been live a little bit by the time y'all are hearing this. And I mean, they hit the ground running. They had a goal of $2,500. They're already up to almost $9,000.
Wow.
So, and I'm not kidding about the quality stuff. This is a good company, good dude, and great quality stuff. So I really encourage y'all to go and check out the Kickstarter. You know, there's a couple different things in there, a couple different reward categories, some ways to try out the products, even if you're unsure if my ringing endorsement is not enough, but these actually use these things. and can speak to the quality and the just the effort that goes into making them. And I think it's at least worth checking out if you haven't already. But they've hit their goal. They're rocking and rolling. So obviously a lot of people do believe in it and are going to help this project be successful.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's good to hear. So what's coming up? Y'all got anything happening soon?
I'm on a big run of events. I've got eight events in 8 weeks, I think, or it's six events in 6 weeks. Yeah. There's 1 week break between each one. So I've paced it I'm trying to pace it pretty well. I've got a week this weekend off, and then the next weekend I've got a big teams event, then I got a weekend off, then I'm traveling interstate for another event, weekend off, and traveling interstate for another event again. So I'm feeling super, super primed for a bunch of new list construction, a bunch of new, you know, meta changes and unit changes. Fingers crossed, Outriders, baby. Go counting points.
Have you been running your yeah, we don't know what the points are going to be, but have you been running your land speeders and stuff, or have you changed your list since then?
So I've been running my three Thunder Strikes, my land speeder Thunder Strikes, which are still, I think, an absolute sleeper. If you're not onto them, I don't know if they're as good in other sub factions, but when you take them with Raven Wing and they get a 5-up or a 4-up invulnerable save, they get extra pips of movement in Devastator Doctrine, they just become extremely good. And they exist in my list because I need things that will guarantee get me lines of sight turn one, because Space Marines can have some pretty well. I'm taking like a hybrid half Deathwing, half Ravenwing, which will have to change because, like I said, I'm at -3 CP.
-3 CP.
Yeah, that's going to have to change. I'll have to make some choices. And it's been performing really well. I've got like 800, 900 points in Deathwing and then the rest in Ravenwing, so it's kind of 50-50. And yeah, I need something because I've got slow Terminators and stuff like that, and a lot of characters that need to be protected by the Terminators. I need to have some speed to get angles. Otherwise, you know, I might not be doing any damage to my opponent for three turns if they're playing conservatively. So I needed something to make them want to come and rumble. In addition, I've been taking three units of three OBSEC bikes, which is why I really want, fingers crossed for the Outriders, because I've got 9 Outriders ready to go. And if they come down 5 to 10 points a model, mwah, they're going in too, baby. I'd love to be able to take them. And yeah, I'm just really excited for a bunch of new unit options. I'd be surprised if there's any discounts on any of the Deathwing stuff, though. Like any Terminators go down, they might even go up. And I honestly wouldn't be unhappy if they went up.
Yeah.
I think they're a bit unreasonable at the points they are at the moment. They're still very durable, but so we'll have to wait and see on that. But yeah, I'm pretty happy with my list. I took 2 Flyers. I took 2 Dark Talons in my previous incarnation, and
a Ravenwing list at the San Diego Open. It was doing pretty well. Yeah, and had a Dark Talon. I mean, was it
pure Ravenwing, or was it 50-50? Or
I think it's pure Ravenwing.
Dude, I might be going that way because I can make an Outrider free if I only take Ravenwing units in it. It's actually quite hard to fill 2,000 points of just Ravenwing. So we'll see. I'm here for it, man. It's going to be exciting.
Oh heck yeah. I'm going to be probably painting some models, getting ready for the ATC.
Oh, how long until it's up?
It's in July, so, you know, about a month or so.
Exciting.
Yep. Looking forward to playing. It's a very competitive event, also a very fun event. It's one of those to where, you know, you got 500 Warhammer players, you know, having an awesome time for bragging, mostly bragging rights, you know. So I'm not quite sure what I'm going to take yet either. Kind of been dragging my feet a little bit.
It's always the way.
Yeah. Turns out it was a good thing, though. Me waiting, not being attached to anything specific.
What are you working on at the moment, Tanya? Are you painting anything new, any new directions or new units on the table?
I'm playing around with some Night Haunt stuff. They're really good. I think that there hasn't really been a lot of like really big events, but I think that they're going to be pretty close to the top of the meta. So I'm kind of playing around with a little bit of that. And so I'm going to be playing them in a little local league that we're having. I am working on writing a Dominion campaign for Necromunda for me and a few friends, and just painting a bunch of stuff. I got a whole bunch of ogres as a gift from Mark Whitaker.
Lovely.
Yeah. So I'm painting some lead belchers. I haven't even added it up. Like, he must have sent me probably close to 2,000 points. So I'm working on painting that stuff up and just sort of focusing on doing a little bit of narrative stuff for a while.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. And I did get third best painted this weekend at the event that I went to. So
booyah.
Boom.
What color palette are you using for your Night Haunt? It's one of those factions I always pay attention to when I see it, because it's the painting is all technique, you know. It's only a very few paints, and then it's just how well you execute the technique. So more, it's one of those ones I always more is interested in how people do it.
My spooky bed sheets are red, and yep. Their armor bits are like a medium bronze, so it's not light, it's not dark, it's kind of in between. And then like their ethereal spindly arms and all of the like candles and the hourglasses and stuff, that's all kind of like Space Wolves kind of color, like that Space Wolves blue gray kind of color. And then all of the bases are very dark, like black with a dry brush of that Space Wolf kind of ethereal color. It's hard to explain the bases, but it's based off of an album cover.
Yes.
So yeah, it kind of looks like all of the bases are fallen trees and stuff, but it's nighttime, so they're all black, but it also looks like they're glowing from underneath.
Sounds amazing.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
It's a really fast kind of paint scheme, which I'm super happy about, and it looks really, really good when it's done. So, yeah, I'm working on a Guardian of Souls right now. I broke his arm off probably 3 times painting this silly model, so we're just going to stick it back on and hope for the best.
Well, before we wrap up, I want to tell you when I did get some tacos in San Diego.
Yeah.
How do they rate?
They were amazing.
They were the best?
Well, the best is relative, but they were delicious. So, now I went to one place, very authentic, very hole in the wall. I went to a place called Mike's Taco Club. And
is it exclusive?
Yeah, did it have like a bouncer at the bowl?
Okay. There was a locked door. You had to order in a little window, but there was a locked door there where other people were sitting inside and eating, but you couldn't go in.
So it is exclusive, and I didn't
make the list, but I was able to order a taco, and okay. it was very good. So you got 3 sauces that came with it in addition to the taco. It had avocado on it, cabbage, steak, you know, really nice corn tortilla, and then on the that's not the only tacos I had. I had tacos throughout those are the first part of the day, and then a couple of the weekend I had more tacos in the end of the week before I went to, or into the weekend before I went to the airport. I went to Not Tacos, which is the restaurant of a YouTuber I follow, the same cooking guy for cooking stuff. And he has like a couple of different restaurants right in there. And I had a Korean short rib taco, a cheeseburger taco, a lamb taco, and a Nashville hot chicken taco.
My goodness.
And they came with a big order of tater tots. And they were all delicious.
Want to buy your metabolism.
You'd have to like roll me out of there, I feel, if I went there.
I'll eat that much. I'll definitely eat that much, but it'll show.
I would feel very ill after, I think.
They were all unique and just tasty and love. Yeah, it was good. I'll definitely be back if I'm ever back in the air. Yeah, I just want to let everybody know. I got to eat a lot of tacos and talk about Warhammer. It's basically a great weekend. I got to see people with their families there. I actually got to talk to several families. They were playing in some of the events, both competitive and like narrative type events, hobby stuff. It was a good weekend. I highly really suggest people come check out these opens. There are 3 left this season, and like you're going to have a good time. I just want to mention that. And other than that, that's our show this week.
It was a good show.
Yeah, appreciate everybody hanging
out. You should like it. You should like it.
Like, share, subscribe. Maybe consider getting a t-shirt from the link. That'd be awesome. 5-star
review on Spotify.
5-star review on Spotify and iTunes and Audible. Wherever you're listening, if there's a way to like upvote, please do, because that's how like other people find us and stuff.
It also gives us the warm fuzzies on the inside.
It does. That I appreciate.
Yeah.
Just assume I'm checking every day and I just want to see it. But so, anyway, that kind of stuff is almost like a hassle-free way to interact with the show and let people know what's up. You know, give us a comment on YouTube. Helps the algorithms basically direct other people to find us. Well, folks, it's been a great week. We'll see y'all next week.
See you then.
Bye, everybody.
What they said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.